You can be turning your Bibles to 2 John. And we're going to begin by reading the entire letter of 2 John. But don't worry, it's only 13 verses, I believe. 13, yes, 13 verses. The elder to the chosen lady and her children, whom I love in the truth. And not I only, but also to all who know the truth, because of the truth which lives in us and will be with us forever. Grace, mercy, and peace from God the Father and from Jesus Christ, the Father's Son, will be with us in truth and love. It has given me great joy to find some of your children walking in the truth, just as the Father commanded us. And now, dear lady, I'm not writing you a new command, but one that we've had from the beginning. I ask that we love one another. And this is love, that we walk in obedience to his commands, as you have heard from the beginning. His command is that you walk in love. Many deceivers who do not acknowledge Jesus Christ as coming in the flesh have gone out into the world. Any such person is a deceiver and the Antichrist. Watch out that you do not lose what you have worked for, but that you may be rewarded fully. Anyone who runs ahead and does not continue in the teaching of Christ does not have God. Whoever continues in the teaching has both the Father and the Son. If anyone comes to you and does not bring this teaching, do not take him into your house or welcome him. Anyone who welcomes him shares in his wicked work. I have much to write to you, but I do not want to use paper and ink. Instead, I hope to visit you and talk with you face to face, so that our joy may be complete. The children of your chosen sister send their greeting. So, I have a reputation of spending time in the writings of John. Some of you who may be visiting or haven't been here for a while or back a few years ago, I started in the Gospel of John and kind of got caught up in that and spent over 100 lessons going through the Gospel of John. Not in one year, in over a 3-year period or so. And after I finished that, people said, well, are you going to go into 1 John? And I did spend a few lessons there, too, about 70. And so now you're sitting there and say, well, looks like we're going into 3 John. And actually, that's not true. We're ending 3 John today. You might not have noticed this, but for the previous, not counting last Sunday, which was Easter, but the previous 6 Sundays, we were actually going through 2 John. I didn't know how long it was going to take, so I didn't tell you what I was doing. So now you know, 7 lessons in 2 John. You know, this is such an obscure book in the Bible for many of us. We, you know, either read it very quickly or we don't read it at all. And so I guess that's why I approached it in an obscure way, just came kind of a backwards way. But I want to look at some of the insights that we've looked at in 2 John, kind of pull it together for all of us, do a little review, and then some encouragement right at the end that we haven't touched on that we'll look at together. This book as a whole, this letter as a whole, has a, you know, people, if you read commentaries on it, people say, well, was this written to a person or was it written to a church? And at first glance, it seems to be written to a person, to the chosen lady and her children. That's spurred a lot of questions over the years. Who's this chosen lady? Who's this elect lady? Some people say, well, her name was in the Greek Kyria, which is a Greek form of the Hebrew name Martha. And so people said, well, maybe it was Martha that it was written to. But then I'm thinking, if John was real young and he's an old man by the time this was written, if this is to the Martha that we know in the Bible, she is a very, very old person at this time. And I really don't think that's just some speculation. The word electa, which it means chosen, which is translated chosen, could be a name of a person. Just like we name someone Grace, and it, you know, that's the name of a person, but it's also the name of a concept. concept of grace. Some people say, well, it's symbolic. It was written to a church. And as I've read through this, it's just about equally split whether some people think it's written to a person or written to a church. And so here's my conclusion to it all. I don't know. I just don't know. About the time I read one person who says it's written to a person, I say, oh, yeah, it's written to a person. And when I read someone else and they say it was written to a church, I say, well, that sounds right, too. But it doesn't change the meaning of the passage. As you look into the passage, it really doesn't change anything, whether it was written to a person or to a church. And I know it's written to us as a church, so it, all that really doesn't matter. One thing I find really interesting, though, is that it might have been a cover letter to 1 John. And I've never thought of this before, but at one point there was one of the ancient older writings in the second century referred to the two letters of John instead of the three letters of John. And then in one of the manuscripts, one of the Bibles they put together, they used 2 John as a cover letter to 1 John, which makes a lot of sense because it addresses it to the church. The concepts of 1 John are found in 2 John. And the way 1 John begins, that which was from the beginning, it just starts out as like a sermon or a tract or something like that. But this may have actually been the cover letter, which I find interesting. But just giving that as a brief introduction, let's look at some of the things that we saw over the past few weeks in 2 John. First of all, I talked about the importance of the connection between truth and love. Do you remember that? This connection between truth and love. And what is so important, especially in America today and in the Western world today, is the importance of definition and meaning. If we do not understand what the definition of words, we cannot communicate with each other. I was over at my parents' house yesterday, and we were talking about a definition of a word, and we all had a little bit different concept of that word. And so, you know what we did? So I think my mother punched a button on her phone, and she said, definition of, you know, and we all, well, I didn't know it meant that, you know. And so it's important for us to have definitions of words and understand that. I think one of Satan's tactics is to water down the meaning of words, important words, so we can't understand what God is saying to us here. And we'll often misinterpret one another. If we misunderstand the meaning of a word, we'll misunderstand the meaning, we'll misunderstand truth, what is true. On eternal issues, this is important. My truth, your truth, being different is acceptable in the world today. But those things that are eternally important, that is not acceptable. We need to understand what God is saying to us. 1975, Queen put out a song that a lot of people know. And I like to read and listen to modern songs. And I think 75 is modern. It is for me. Because it's the poets of the day that are expressing the concepts of the world. Bohemian Rhapsody. So it's a good song. I mean, it speaks. It really does speak. Listen to these words. He begins this way. Is this the real life? Is this just fantasy? Some of you are got that in your, now you got the tune in your mind, don't you? Caught in a landslide. No escape from reality. I'm just a poor boy. I need no sympathy because I'm easy come, easy go, a little high, a little low. Any way the wind blows doesn't really matter to me. And you listen to what these words are saying, what these people are saying as they write these songs. They're speaking from the heart. And the song ends this way. Nothing really matters. Anyone can see. Nothing really matters to me. Any way the wind blows. And this is what the world thinks. This is the way the world lives. This is the direction of the world today. Nothing matters. Nothing matters. There's no truth. There's no love. Love is a feeling that is fleeting. That's all it is. Take it while you can. It's easy come, it's easy go. A little fast, a little slow. That's it. And that's how the world directs their life. And that's the way Satan wants to direct your life too. That is the fate of those who have no anchor, that have no stability. And yet Jesus offers truth. He offers concrete truths. He says it does matter. The world offers an illusion. Is this just a fantasy? And that's what the world believes. But Jesus says, no, there is truth. There is reality. Jesus offers love that's connected to that reality, that truth, because he is both. He said, I am the truth. I am reality. If you want to know what's real, look at me. Look at my life. Listen to my teaching. That's what truth is. That is what reality is. Faith in Jesus is rock solid. It's a firm foundation. It's real life. 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 19 says, it's life that is truly life. It's just not living. It's just not existing, but it's life that is truly life. And yet the world only ends, what they offer you is despair and disillusionment. Disillusion. I told you about a friend of mine, an acquaintance years ago that I was speaking to. It was an atheist. He was trying to convert me to atheism. And, of course, I was trying to bring him to Christianity, to the Lord. In our last conversation, he was talking about if you just gave up God, how you'd be free and it would be real and that would be life. You could live life to the full. And I said, if I follow your belief pattern, I could punch you in the nose right now and it wouldn't matter. And he looked at me like, well, it would. Well, it would to you, but it wouldn't to reality. It wouldn't matter. Nothing is real. A punch in the nose is a feeling that you get. That's it. And he kind of got angry with me, but I didn't punch him. But John connects truth and love, and he points to Jesus as a source and says, that's what's real. If you want to know what's solid and what's real, you've got to look at him. And then he goes in further and he talks about how special you are. You're chosen. You are chosen people. One way that we can see a person's heart is by the words that they choose. What does someone call you? You can hear the heart of people by the words that they choose to name you. You know, grandparents, what do? You know, we nickname our grandchildren. We give, I call my granddaughters, have three out of the 10 are girls. And those are my three little princesses. They're my princess. So I'll ask them, what are you? Well, I'm your princess. Well, what does that say? It's saying you're special. I don't care what anyone else says. To me, you're our darling. You're special. And we can hear the heart of God by what he calls us. He calls us something. God often changed the names of people to reflect the reality of who they were or who he wanted them to be. He called Abram Abraham. He called Jacob Israel. And you can go through the Bible and see these different names. And the point of it, it wasn't that I don't like Jacob, I think I'll call him Israel. There was a meaning behind those names. And he's saying, I want you to live according to this name that I'm giving you. They often didn't live as they were called, for they were called to live up to their name. And we're called to live up to our name. Jesus, the word Jesus, do you know what that means? It has a meaning. Salvation. Does that surprise you? The word Jesus means salvation because that's what he came to give us, salvation. And everything that word means by salvation, it doesn't mean you only get to go to heaven, but it means the way you live your life right now is in the state of salvation. We sing a beautiful song. I love this song. I will change your name. You know that song? Listen to it. I will change your name, God says. You shall no longer be called wounded, outcast, lonely, or afraid. I will change your name. Your new name shall be confidence, joyfulness, overcoming one, faithfulness, friend of God, one who seeks my face. You want to sing that? You want to sing that? Can you sing? I can't lead song. I can, but you know, you don't want to. So just start that song. Let's sing that together. One name that he calls us is chosen. And that means you're chosen out of something. You're chosen from something. And it's a deeply personal choice. It's intentional. When you choose, it's intentional. And that's the meaning behind this word, that God intentionally chose you. He chose you out of the world to come with him. And it's a deep personal choice. This is incredible, life-changing news if we open up our ears. He who has ears, let him hear, Jesus said. And this is something we need to hear. He chose you out of the world. The God of the universe wants you. His desire is that you will be with him. And we have a choice too. What do we choose? Do we choose to live our lives out in this reality of who we are? That we're chosen, that we have confidence, that we have joy, that we have overcome through the blood of the Lamb, that we're friends of God. Do we choose to live out our lives that way? Or do we choose to live our lives out in pain, disappointment, rejection? How do you see yourself? And that's how many people see their lives. They base their reality on their childhood and how they were rejected as a child. Maybe by parents, maybe by friends, by other people. And they go through life with that view of themselves. Their demeanor shows it. The way they act shows it. The way they treat others is rooted in this fact. I am a hurt person. I'm rejected. I'm bitter. I'm disappointed. I'm unloved. I'm a loser. And so they live their lives that way. That's how, and I'm talking about Christians who have been given a new name. Your actions are a reflection of who you believe you are, and how you treat others is a reflection on who you believe you are. And all the while, God keeps whispering to you, I chose you. I love you. I'm with you. I am your Abba Father. I am the rock of your salvation. I am the water and bread of life. Give me your disappointments so you can have joy. Give me your hurts so you can live free. Give me your sins so I can give you life. And our problem is this. That news is such good and impossible good news that we can hardly believe it. And so we choose to live our lives as if we are not chosen. We choose to live our lives disappointed, hurt, bitter, unkind. And God keeps saying, that's not who you are. Don't live that way. And that brings us into the third lesson that we had, grace, mercy, and peace. You know, we brush over these words, grace is in verse 3, grace, mercy, and peace from God the Father. And we brush over those greetings as if it was just a simple hello, that John is just saying, hi, you know, he's dear so-and-so. And part of our problem is we live our lives in such a way, we don't realize that these are things that God has given us. We read over these things as if it was a howdy doody rather than a reality in our lives. And these three words are connected to all the other words we looked at, love and truth and chosen. These are rooted in grace and mercy and peace. We're not going to spend a lot of time, but spend a whole lesson on it to look at what they are. Grace is the good gift of life we don't deserve. Mercy is not receiving punishment we do deserve. And peace is the result of God's grace and mercy. I was out on his way this past week teaching a class, and we got into these words. And I was trying to, you know, I said, do you know what grace is? And, you know, we talked about it a little bit. Do you know what mercy is? And I said, let me give you an illustration. You're driving down the road, and you're going 50 in a 40 zone. And the police pulls you over. And you know it. I mean, you knew you were speeding. You're sitting there. You're a little upset. He comes up to the window and says, hey, you know why I stopped you? They always ask that. I guess I do. He's driving too fast. He said, yeah, you were. He said, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm just going to give you a warning. Slow it down, okay? That's mercy. You deserved a ticket, but you just received mercy. You don't receive grace, you receive mercy. But he goes on, he looks in your car and says, hey, you're almost on empty. You're about out of gas. And he reaches in his pocket and gives you $50. And he says, why don't you fill up before you as you go down the road? Now you've received grace. The guy at his way said, I think it's a setup. But listen to me, that's exactly what we believe, too. We've received grace and mercy, and we think we're set up. We don't believe that God can actually not punish our sins. Surely he's got to punish me. We actually don't believe that we have this gift of life, and we don't even explore what it is. Because it's just a word. We just think we're set up, and we're not being set up. God gave his son so that we could have grace and mercy and the result of that, peace. How do you drive down the road if you got the $50 bill and not a ticket? You're at peace. You're at peace with the world. You're at peace with everyone. Because of the love of God, we're chosen to be his children. His grace, his mercy impacts our lives. We live at peace with him and others. This is reality. This is truth. This is the Christian life. The Christian life is not trying to figure out what we can do to appease a wrathful God, but it's figuring out how we can live in the overwhelming reality of a God that impossibly loves you. That's what the Christian life is all about. And that brings us to the joy of faithfulness. In verse 4, he says, it has given me great joy to find some of your children walking in the truth. This great joy, the word means to the max. That's really what it means. It means you've given me joy to the max. You know, to see those that we love, to see those that we've brought to the Lord, and they're remaining in the faith, they're remaining faithful, they're growing. I'm telling you, as I have aged, I have found that gives me great joy. A lot of times we get very excited about someone becoming a Christian. And that's good. We should be excited about people coming to the Lord. But you know what gets me really excited, even more excited than that? It's watching faith grow. I think part of it's personality. Part of it's our gift. Some people are gifted to bring someone to birth. Obstetrician, yeah. Some of you are, that's the kind of doctor you are. I'm the pediatrician. I like to see them grow, get stronger. And we all have our different gifts. I love to see a Christian, insecure person become a Christian and grow in their confidence, grow in their knowledge, overcome fear, grow in the fruit of the Spirit. That gives me great joy. But this joy goes beyond all that. There's this joy of one's faithfulness that you is a gift to others. It's a joy to others. But there's joy that comes to yourself in your faithfulness, in your personal faithful walk with God. And even more so, there's joy that God gives you as you walk faithfully with Him. And all these things move into how we relate to each other. And that can be summed up in one word, love. Verses 5 through 11, we've already read it. We won't take time, but he talks about love over and over. And when we get to verse 7 through 11, it doesn't seem like he's talking about love, but he is. Many deceivers who do not acknowledge Jesus Christ, he says. And then he says, watch out that you do not lose what you have worked for. He says, if anyone comes to you and does not bring this teaching, do not take him into your house. Love doesn't always feel nice. This is a loving act here. And he says, don't bring a person into your house. Don't fellowship with the person who is teaching certain things. He says in verse 5 and 6, I'm asking that we love one another. He could have commanded. He could have said, I'm commanding you to love one another. He could have pointed the finger at them and said, you love. But he didn't do that. He said, he pleaded with them. And he's placed himself in the middle of this and he said, I'm asking you to do something. I'm pleading with you and I'm putting myself here that we love one another. But love doesn't always feel nice. We're so wrapped up in our feelings. We want good feelings and we desire these good feelings. But right here on the heels of I'm asking that we love one another, he says, but listen. Sometimes that act of love hurts. Sometimes it doesn't feel nice. We want to welcome people into our homes. We want to bring people into hospitality, show hospitality. But John says those intent on teaching against Christ, don't welcome them. Don't welcome these teachers. And it doesn't mean, he's not saying, if we disagree with someone, don't welcome them. Otherwise, we all need to leave because we all disagree with each other in certain areas. We do. I know of one man who supported a missionary for several years, and he stopped supporting him when after something like 20 years, he realized that he had a different teaching. And it was, I cannot remember when he was explaining to me, the teaching was so slight, I couldn't see the difference. But it was a slight difference. And so he stopped supporting this missionary because of this slight difference in teaching. And it had nothing to do with the fundamental gospel. And so to me, it would just lead that I don't share. I don't share my thoughts. I don't share the scriptures. I don't share what I'm thinking out of fear that you're going to mark me and say, well, you're a false teacher now because you disagree with me. Well, you're a false teacher, too, because you disagree with me. That's not what he's talking about here. He's talking about the fundamental difference in the basic fundamental of who Jesus is. He says, when it comes to that, a line must be drawn. When it comes to who Jesus is in the flesh, he came for the purpose of giving us life, of taking away sin, his sacrifice. You have to draw the line there. If anyone teaches anything different, you need to reject that person. But the rejection is to help bring that person back to God. And so that they can be received. And then lastly, we saw how we're to walk. And in verse 4, he says, it gives me joy to find your children walking in the truth. And then in verse 6, he says, his command is that we walk in love. This walking is a metaphor. And it means this is how we live our lives. This is the direction of our life. This is our purpose, our goal, our plans, our dreams. This is walking is a discipline of faith. It requires focus. It requires effort. It requires perseverance. And we saw four ways we are to walk: in truth, love, obedience, and faith. Truth and love sums up the character of Jesus, and obedience and faith is a response to his character. And now we come to the last two verses. I have much to write to you, but I do not want to use paper and ink. Instead, I hope to come visit you and talk with you face to face so that our joy may be complete. The children of your chosen sister sends their greetings. The joy of hospitality. That's what he's talking about here. This joy, I know many of you have grasped this, but I hope many of you will grasp this. This fulfills the Christian in so many ways. In our Western world, we've lost the joy of hospitality, I think. You get in a car, you drive down the road, and you don't even have to think about it. With a swipe of a credit card, you can have a comfortable place to sleep and food to eat. Oh, you say, well, go to another country where they don't have that, where there's not hotels around or very few hotels around. There's not restaurants. When you're just going down the road and you're in the middle of nowhere, and at that point, when you get thirsty and hungry, you are thankful for hospitality. The Fijians, as you walk past, I did this several times in a village. I'm in a village, and they'll be at their open door. There's not a closed door, and they'll call out, "My Kana, come eat. Come eat." And it's a greeting, but they mean it too. If you said, okay, if you're hungry and you go in, they would feed you whatever they have. My Kana. When people offer that food and that comfort, they're also offering you protection. And here John says, I long to be with you. I want to be with you. And literally, he says, instead of face to face, literally the words there are mouth to mouth. And it's an idiomatic expression that means a closeness, hospitality, speaking with one another, talking with one another. I believe something special happens when you're invited into someone's home. I think something special happens to you when you invite someone into your home. When you share their food or you share your food with them. When you sit in their house and you see the things around the house, the things that are important to them, whether it's things hanging on the wall or little mementos, the conversation, the laughter, at times the tears, the heart shared. And you know that's true. You can sit there and think about people. You've been in their house and they've been in your house. And my mind goes back to these people sitting on hard wooden floors on a woven mat with a plate of food at your sitting there, and your legs are aching because they're not used to sitting cross-legged for long. And that's not a Fijian sitting there. That's not only a brother in Christ or a sister in Christ. That's my friend that I'm sharing with. That's Etta, who is sitting there, and my children called her Nana or Nal because that was their grandmother in Fiji. Her house is hardly bigger than this. I don't think it's bigger than this space up here. You can see through the walls at places. There's no glass on the windows. And I say, what has she served? There's some roti and curry, and that looks like, what does that look like? Plantains fried? Fish lolo that she's serving. She served whatever she had. She gives to us. Sorelli there, low. People that are dear to you because of the time you spend with them. John says, I have much to write to you, and I wish you would have kept on writing. I'd have more information to share with you. But he says, I don't want to use paper and ink. I want to take your time so that you are reading. Instead, I hope to come visit you and talk with you mouth to mouth. so that our joy may be complete. And that word means when he says that it'll be complete, it's filled to capacity. That's what it means, that my joy will be filled to capacity. It's right to the top and it's overflowing. And so as we read 2 John, he reminds us, listen, this is who you are. This is who you are. You're loved. You're chosen. You're grounded in truth, which is Jesus. And this is how you walk. You walk in obedience. You walk in truth, in love, in faith. And you walk in the joy of hospitality. And that's 2 John. And one lesson. Well, seven. One that you knew, seven that you didn't, six that you didn't know. So I'm going to, as we often do, extend an invitation song to anyone who feels the need to respond. You know, my greatest response that I'd like for you to respond is to begin practicing the joy of hospitality. Whatever that is, sometimes you can't bring people into your home. It's just the situation is that way, so don't feel guilty. But there's ways that you can show hospitality. And I know we do. We're a hospitable church. But I want to encourage us all to be that type of Christian, that we're sharing our lives, sharing our time, sharing our what we have, whatever it is, with one another and growing in our faith with each other. If you need to respond to the elders, come forward. If not, respond to one another.
So awfully and tenderly here.